Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. One of the things I'm the most proud of with ADHD Mums is that Facebook group is the most positive, supportive group of women, and I don't attempt fucking fate, right? But it is. I'm going to drop the link into the show notes. I never sell anything in it. I don't let anyone sell in it. It's purely a supportive place. And I wrote in there at the Facebook group and said, I've got Leticia coming in. She's a tech and an AI wizard. I've been counting down and wanting to do an AI episode for well over a year and a half. However, her episode is tomorrow and I haven't done the episode plan. And I was wondering, could someone possibly help me out and write some questions? The way that people wrote about AI was completely different to what I thought. One of the comments said, I honestly think I would have drowned trying to deal with school and the NDIS without AI. It has honestly saved my family because without it, I wouldn't have submitted an application to the NDIS. She got my NDIS application pack from my website. It's free. But then right underneath, the comments started and they went in a direction I wasn't ready for. And another mum said, look, I just don't trust it. It makes things up and I feel like it just tells you what you want to hear. I think if I had to make a guess, I would say at least 60% of them were quite skeptical. I thought there would be more like, oh my fucking God, I use it to meal plan. A lot of mums said things like, and I'll just read out a couple. I don't feel comfortable putting information about my child into it. What happens to the data? Isn't this bad for the environment? What will our kids do for work? I'm really concerned about it and I refuse to use it for those reasons. And then a couple of comments actually said that they really were hoping that I would have a considered theme with AI and I would show both sides of it, not just how amazing it is, but also what is the other side of it that we're struggling to understand. A lot of mums were talking about using AI like an external brain. They write emails that they can't face. They'll untangle some school communication. They'll use it to think when they literally can't think. They're so burnt out. But others are looking at it thinking it's risky. It feels overwhelming. And it feels like one more thing that I don't even have capacity to set up. And so the question with this episode changed from what can AI help us to when you're drowning, does AI actually make it lighter or does it come with a cost that we don't fully understand? And that question really threw me. So who would I bring in to talk about AI? It would not be myself because I've spent 20 minutes setting up a headset to find that my kids have press the fucking mute button in the background over the school holidays, which cost us 20 minutes and half of my sanity. That's why I brought in Leticia Andrack from Understanding Zoe. If you haven't checked out her last episode about the invisible load and mum coordination and what we can do to ease the invisible load, then please go back and check it out. I'm going to put that into the show notes. And here we are. It is Leticia. How are you, Leticia?
I am really good. Thank you so much, Jane, for having me.
We are only 40 minutes late and you've been incredibly patient. I feel like I should put a hazard on all of my guest bookings. Oh, it should take an hour, but allow for 2 hours because I might run an hour late. Honestly, I really wanted to bring Leticia in to talk about AI because you are a self-proclaimed nerd. That's right, isn't it, Leticia?
I've worked in AI before AI was cool. I started in 2014 ago. No one was really talking about AI. So yeah, I'm definitely a nerd.
The founder and CEO of Understanding Zoe. Leticia has built that platform herself, like nerd fucking central. I've brought Leticia on because she's a mum. She's neurodivergent herself. She's got neurodivergent children. She's in the fucking trenches with us and her work sits right around lived experience and clinical expertise. So welcome to you, Leticia.
Thank you. Thank you, Jane.
So let's jump right in, Leticia. Let's talk first up about what AI can do. Could you please take me to a situation where AI has really helped a mum who felt like they were at breaking point?
AI can be seen as a weapon or as a tool. It depends who is using it and how you're using it. I just want to say that I'm not here to be an AI guru. I'm here to make sure that you use AI ethically and you know about AI because we need women using AI. Otherwise, the biases will be amplified and we need women who are neurodivergent using AI. Otherwise, again, AI would be even more ableist.
When you said we really need women using it, why is it so important that women use it?
Because AI will be learning from the data that are within input into the model. And so if we are not putting data that is coming from us, our use cases, our experiences, then AI is going toward gender biases, which is actually something that already exists. There is a beautiful book by Tracy Spicer, who is a feminist, called Man-Made. And it's really talking about how AI amplifies gender biases. So if we are not using it as women, we are not part of the AI revolution. And then we will be erased in those data, in those information, which then will become the truth in the future. And I'm using air quote here.
What would be the difference between me jumping onto AI into a space that women have actively been using AI versus that they haven't? What is the difference in my experience?
It's a complete different experience. It's like today when you have prosthetic things that are built, which are actually for men and not for women. So it's not fit for you. It will be the same thing with AI. You will have an editor, which is actually male dominant, rather than taking into account your hormones, taking into account the shift in menopause, perimenopause, the journeys that you go through when you go through matrescence and you have children. It's going to negate 50% of the population, because this is how AI works. AI goes through a fuel of data that it's getting access to, and then it uses that to train itself to then give you answers. So you will basically be erased. And I know when I say that it's scary, but it's really why I want more women using AI.
I just want to make sure I've got this right. So let's say I've been having trouble sleeping because I have really bad PMS and PMDD, and my sleep is the first thing that goes. If I jumped onto AI and asked it and said, I can't sleep, what's the go here? You're saying that if women haven't been using it, it's going to be a response around males. It won't take into account hormones, PMS. It won't say, where are you on my cycle? Do you have perimenopause? How old are you? It will just say, do sleep hygiene, meditate, take a load off and go watch the footy with your mates. Like, it will be a male dominated response. Is that what you mean?
Definitely will lack context. You will not have all the context. And that's why nowadays you have more and more companies that are creating solutions that are ingesting women's data to correct those biases. Because as women, we've been out of so much research, so much data, so much information that those biases are amplified by AI. Because today, most of the model, you talk about ChatGPT, we can talk about Anthropic, we can talk about a Copilot, like all of those models, they are trained on the information that is accessible on the internet. And so the biases are amplified by AI. Gender bias, ableism, racism. AI is amplifying all of it.
Let's just say a lot of women, instead of typing into Google or typing to their best friend, I can't sleep, I don't know why, we all typed into any AI platform and then said, oh, I think it might be my hormones, and like I'm problem solving it right in real time. Would AI then suggest or start to prompt women it could be their cycle because of all that data, with women going, that's it. Yes, it was that. I got HRT now, I'm feeling better. Is that what you're referring to exactly?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the more information you will have about this, so to amplify the bias the other way around. Think about AI being created in garage in San Francisco by white cisgender, neurotypical, heterosexual dude. This is what's happening, right? So what we need in AI, and this is where the CEO of Anthropic mentioned it, it's like people who actually know the nuances and bring literature, knowledge, diversity, diverse experience within AI. So the model will get better and you will see the real humanity within it.
Okay. So that if everyone's typing into AI meal planning, for example, problem solving it, it would get better at understanding what's important to women.
And it will understand feeding differences. It will understand all of those things rather than just giving you its three vegetables and three fruits and so on. And this is something I used to really dread, making the lunch boxes. I don't know if anyone loves doing this, but I literally hate it. And I am French and I grew up in a culture where we have canteen, where we don't need to prepare our lunchbox and so on. And so for me, with feeding differences, with everything that's happening in my own family, I really struggle, and the, you know, crunch and sip, all of that is so challenging. So I created a project within Cloud AI, or we can do that within ChatGPT, where I imported things that I know my daughter loves. I can access and buy quickly close to my house, and I don't have to travel half an hour to buy this safe food. And then I can get a plan already done for what do I put in the lunchbox the next day? And then what do I need to buy? And then I have my list to go on to Woolies or wherever you're going and doing your grocery. And then this is just immediately reducing my mental load and the executive functioning. And it will remember, because I have this project and this thread which is there. So it will remember my thing around when the girls love eating, what is easy for me to access as food, what can I prepare? And so it makes everything easier and smoother. So that's one example that works for me.
Yeah, and it takes the decision-making out.
Because this is what overwhelms me. I am PDA, so for me, all of these are demand added on. and I'm autistic and ADHD as well. So really, at some point, I didn't want to wake up. I was naked in my bed being like, I know I need to prepare the lunchboxes, but I just don't want to leave my bed because I will have to think, open the fridge and so on. Whereas now I just open my Clode app, look at, okay, so today, this easy peasy done.
I think all women know the mental load is so difficult. My hubby, we have an understanding that I'll do that meal planning bit and he'll do the cooking bit. I was saying to him, I understand that you cook, but that's not actually the whole fucking task. Like, I actually have to do this. So we're actually sharing cooking 50-50. That's not your task. So to have that meal organized and have Wednesday defrost chicken, Thursday buy the steak, whatever it is that you eat, to have that done and then just going and doing the task is a completely different fucking.
Completely. And I love cooking. I love making the lunchboxes. What I hate is thinking about, okay, do I have the things that I know is safe food? And so all of this planning is coming into place. And that's where AI really helps me.
One of the most stressful things that I think as a mom, if I could take out, is just ARFID. You don't know what ARFID is. It's avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. I find it incredibly anxiety provoking. Not only do you have to, I have to say have to, because if I don't create multiple meals, my children do not eat at all. So I don't feel like I have a choice. Eat that or they don't eat. And particularly one of them is quite underweight. He's got low iron. I can't do that. So I know that if I don't have specific things on specific days, they won't eat anything. And it's always really annoying when they need to have an Aussie roll from IGA, right? So you can't buy them and really freeze them because my kids know. So I have to have specific days of the week where, like, I'm driving to netball training. I know I need to stop at that IGA, get an Aussie roll. And I would imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, Letitia, with what you're saying, that it would actually be able to tell me on these days, can you go and do that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, as long as you start investing this information within this, so I call this a project or a folder or a custom GPT, whichever tool you use, you start putting all of those information. And I even go one step further. I connect my calendar, I connect my email, but I know not everyone on this podcast will be techie enough to do that. But then it's like, it's really looking at all of this and it's context aware. And then I don't have to think. I literally don't have to think about those things. And I can focus my thinking on things that really matters. That it's not about, okay, I need to go and buy this cheese stick because this is the only place. The Aldi cheese stick is the only cheese stick. I have children with ARFID. It's the only cheese stick they will eat. I might
say that.
So I need to plan to go to Aldi because we don't have one close by. It's all of those little things that adds up. And so now I just delegate that to AI. And we will cover that. I am not delegating everything and I'm very conscious about how we do it. But those things with low risk, high impact, definitely it is a tool.
Okay. So Letitia, Facebook group. One of the mums says that she dumps everything into AI and she uses it to write emails that she can't face, text messages, that kind of thing. And then another mum commented directly after and said she uses it when she's like mentally spiraling and can't talk it out. How does AI actually help with those scenarios? Because that's the most common one that I see that women say they like.
Yes. And LinkedIn is the first kind of use case that I experienced. So as soon as ChatGPT came out, I was one of the first signing up to the paid subscription. At the beginning, they were limiting it to only 1 million people, and I managed to be part of the first 1 million.
And yeah. You were one of those 1 million.
I tell you, I jumped on straight away because, as I said, I worked in AI since 2014, and I know the power of it and the limitation of it. So I jumped straight away, and the first thing that I did was write an email. I'm non-native English speaker. I am autistic and ADHD, and my email were always too blunt, too brutal, not enough political. So I use it to really put all of those beautiful things around, which will fit in a neuronormative world, right? So when I have to write an email to a teacher, to a client, to a friend, and I need to put the nice thing or an SMS or reply to a comment, which may be a bit abrasive, I don't know how to be politically correct. Really struggle with that. Being French and autistic, some people are like, oh my gosh, you're so brutally honest. And that's where AI really helps me. And that's where I really encourage people to use AI because, again, it takes off the executive functioning. If you're dyslexic, so I am dyslexic as well, it's really helping you to then take off all of that stress of, well, am I putting the I in the right place? Or only one L? Is it double N? How do I write this word? So it's just really taking this, all of it out. So you can just start using it. And for me, as I struggle to write, I, on top of that, use Whisper Flow. So I just voice. So I click on a fan on my laptop or on my phone, and I have Whisper Flow. I have zero interest recommending any app whatsoever. But I just love it because then I am in my car and I just say, okay, I have to write an email about blah, blah, blah. And I write and I voice note all of this. And then it's writing for me. So for me, it's really helpful because talking is easier than writing. And for some other people, it will be easier to actually write. So AI is trying to make things way accessible for those of us who struggle with either talk or writing. So in terms of the woman's paralleling and talking it out, I used to do that in my car. So now they release the voice and you can have a conversation and so on and so forth. I started talking in my car to AI and just kind of talking to it with things that I had to vent about. I just dropped my daughter at school and the teacher said this and that, and it made me feel so uncomfortable. And then talking out to me with some limitation, which we'll mention, I'm sure, in this episode. But actually, it's one of the most important use cases in the last year. It's the fact that AI becomes this emotional companion.
I understand the email thing, probably the most common, I think. The spiraling and can't talk it out, I have found that to be really useful, where particularly say, I'm angry about this, but I don't know why. Like, for example, my hubby, sometimes he would say things that would aggravate me and I didn't know why. And then I would be trying to figure out, because I'm fucking in my head all the time, why am I so angry with him? And he'd be like, look, I don't think you're being very nice about this or whatever it is. But I couldn't understand why I'd be getting so angry. And if I voice noted that in, it would kind of break it down and go, you're actually angry that he changed it at the last second. You're not actually angry about the barbecue or whatever it is. Do you know, how does it do that? If you write in your thoughts or you're spiraling or your emotional companion, how does that work?
It's a very good question. And this is pattern detection, right? Yeah. AI, the thing that AI does, I'm just going to use a quick analogy, it identified patterns. And so then when you're having this conversation, it's identifying the pattern and the trigger and what may have happened. The risk with doing that is sometimes it is pleasing you, people pleasing. The phone response of AI is real and it's presenting a risk. And this is the way many large language modeling have been created. It's about please the user. So the risk of it will take your side in this kind of conversation. Unless you are very clear about, I want to see the other side and things like that. But it will detect the pattern and it will give you some insight and it will try and interact with you and identify, is there anything else underneath? So it's just the way it is trained and the way it is working. So that's why you find it very helpful in the emotional. And it's actually one of the top use cases in 2025 of AI, which is this kind of emotional companionship, this kind of person or thing you will voice to without being scared of judgment, without being scared of anyone backfiring, because you can really talk to it and feel this sense of safety, even though it's not always safe, but you have this sense of safety and reassurance.
I think as well, I like the way it asks questions at times. It won't just go, you're angry because, you know, it asks a lot of reflective coaching style questions, which people probably pay a lot of coaches or psychologists or doctors, whoever they are, quite a lot of money to get them to ask some questions to get them to understand themselves. The way that it asks questions and identifies the patterns, what you said, is really helpful because you could then take some of that information to a psychologist, for example, and some of what is going on, you'd be like, I think this is what it is, rather than spending group sessions attempting to figure it out.
Exactly. And this is where something that I always want to tell to people is AI is not here to replace a therapist. It's here to help you either before or after digest what you've said and then going back to the therapist. I'm really one of those who would fully believe that AI is an enabler, not here in replacement. And those who will thrive in the AI time will be those who know how to use AI and where AI starts and where it ends and when humanity starts and where it ends. And it can be a journey where we have AI, human, AI, human, AI, human. It doesn't have to be all AI or all human.
I have worked as a psychologist, but I'm a former psychologist. I'm not a current psychologist. APRA, don't come get me. But I found that it would be like 3 sessions with somebody just to figure out through all of the words what we're actually even working on. Like somebody like, I'm really anxious. I don't know why. It would be at least 3 sessions to even figure out like what it is. I didn't enjoy being a therapist. It was always the men that I dread because they'd come in and the guy would be like 50, 60, right? And he'd come with his wife and it would be a health retreat. And as part of that, they get psychology. And so he'd come in, his wife's obviously booked it. And for them to come to this really expensive retreat, they've obviously got a fuckload on, right? Like they've obviously been very stressed out. And they'd come and the man would sit down and I'd be like, oh my God, here we go. And he'd be like, I've never spoken to anyone before. And I'd be like, okay, where's this going to go? And it would just be like the most traumatic, heavy, like the amount of shit that's happened to some people. Like it would take sessions and sessions. And you've only asked one question. They've just started going with the most hugest stories. And it would be such a huge amount of time. And then I'd have to manually figure out what it is that we are even going to work on to create a session plan. But if that person could come and say to a therapist, I've got really high anxiety, I think it's related to this, and they could do all of that work, that would be such a better use of time with the amount of weight that we've got for psychologists plus the session cost. Exactly. I think it's a great point.
And we also have all of this debate around AI transcript. Should we or shouldn't we use it in therapy?
Yep.
And I truly believe that if we start shooting it then, and then the therapist in between session managed to extract from those transcripts element that they may have missed through their own biases or through the fact that they may have listened in a different way with a different angle and so on. I truly believe that AI can be a partner of the person who is coming to therapy and the person who is giving therapy. We need to stop seeing AI as the weapon and start seeing it as a tool when we put the right things around it. So I really love what you just said. And I think right now there is two different visions when actually we need to use the end. AI can be a tool and it can be a weapon. So we need to be mindful about this.
For example, there was a very strong fear in the Facebook group. People were commenting and saying, I'm using this with my spiraling thoughts. It saved me. But then other women were commenting and saying, this is the part I'm concerned about though. Is it a replacement for real support? And I feel like you've made a great point because it doesn't have to be black and white. They have to be, it's good or bad. What do you think mums need to understand about AI when they're using it to dump or spiral or they're thinking about it?
I think it's always remembering that AI is not a human. It's built by human. So we as human have the power of deciding what it does. And that's where, you know, a lot of people think about AI as this black box, but actually we design what is around this black box. So if you start using it and you start spiraling, you need to know that AI will come and please you. So then you can tell it, stop pleasing me. I really want you to ask me questions and be the devil advocate because you know that limitation. Then when you start talking to AI and you're like, oh my goodness, you're giving me things that are not realistic for me. Right. So give it what's realistic. What is your current situation? Are you a single mom with 4 children who are all neurodivergent? Like, what is your current situation? Give it to it so that it can understand you better and provide better. What I always love to say is think of AI as your car. Your car, you're driving it. Okay. And I actually have a self-driving car. But even if I use a self-driving mode, I am the one who is responsible if the car is doing something wrong. You are, as a human, responsible. And this is how I love to say we need to use AI responsibly. So remember your place and the place of AI. So AI doesn't replace you as a mom. It is here to help you uncover things that you may not be conscious about. It may help you do things that you don't have time. It may be here as a support to decipher the elements in any emails that you couldn't decipher because you're completely overwhelmed or you're angry or you're running on this dysregulation state where you need something to help you go back to more of a regulated state. So really knowing where AI sits.
Before I said that I have used it in the past when I've been spiraling or I've been angry with my husband and he said to me, Jane, I don't think you're understanding my perspective. And he very rarely pushes back and he always says sorry. So when he pushes back and says, I think that's not really fair. If he says that, I'm really fucking wrong. I'm way out of line. But what's happened with that recently is I've gone down to our back dam with our dog, gone to cool off. And I've gone into ChatGPT, for example, and I've got a thread that's like a long-standing thread with all the different reasons why I'm upset with my husband. And it helps me figure it out, right?
Yeah.
And then often I can go back with like a bit more of a concise, like, this is actually what will work for me. I find it helpful for that. However, what I have found is that when I'm in a hormonal mess and I'm in a bit of a mood, I have a very good way of creating an argument real quick with him. And I get very angry. I fly off the fucking handle and it can be over something really small. And I usually have to say, by the way, don't talk to me for 3 days with anything you think might upset me. But so I went down to the back dam and he said to me that he was going to be going out Friday night, for example. And I flew off the handle about it, wasn't happy, told him he couldn't fucking go. I lost my shit. Went down to the back dam and ChatGPT said to me, you are completely right. You are doing so much. He's not doing enough. And it fucking just fed me like exactly what I wanted to fucking hear, right? And I was thinking, I am right. He's a fucking DV person. He's gaslighting me. Like I was so angry. And then anyway, it was really good because the dog started playing up and then he wouldn't calm. It was a whole thing. And so I ended up being down there much longer than what I thought. And then as I was walking back up, I was looking at the trees and I thought, I think my husband might be right. And I think I'm hormonal and I think I'm fucking off my head. And then went, said to ChatGPT, can you take his perspective? I'm concerned because I got PMS. And then it showed me his perspective completely, talked me through how he might feel, that then made me feel like a total bitch. And then I went over there and said, sorry. But if I hadn't have done that, I would have gone back up and I would have fucking slayed him with what it said to me. Is that what you're meaning in real life?
It's exactly what I mean. And the term is called sycophancy, which is really how AI is set up, and major models have this issue, which is it's never pushing back. It's always saying, oh, this is a good idea. Amazing. You're amazing. Well done. And this is really supportive. But then this is where you can have problems if you just work with AI in this way. So what you need to do is exactly what you did. But it's what are the problems that I am missing with this? What is another perspective? Can you be the devil advocate? Please push back on this. So you're like, you have the perspective, which is here to please you, to the phone response, like just making sure you're feeling safe and comfortable and so on, and asking it to take the other perspective as well. What am I missing? What is the problem with the situation? Can you be the devil advocate? Push back on this.
So if people are spiraling into it, you mentioned the car. I thought that was a great analogy. So what you're saying is, I am Jane. I'm using AI as my car, but I need to also ask it for the other perspective before I go start another argument. Because if it says, you are right, you should divorce your husband, you might want to just sanity check that with yourself, like sit on that decision rather than making it blindly like ChatGPT knows me well. It said that he's abusive and I should leave him. Is that what you mean?
It's exactly what I mean. And this is where I think when I talk about sycophancy, it's really important for every woman using AI to be educated about this, knowing how it can help us as a tool and what are the risks, which is a weapon, going back to this. So the risk of just starting talking nonstop with AI is this risk of just going down a rabbit hole. But actually, hey, let's stop that pattern. Can we now, which is exactly what you did, walking back and looking at the tree and so on, you had like this kind of connection in some way back to your husband, back to his perspective and the bigger perspective, and being able to ask AI, can you give me how he might feel? Or can you give me the other approach? Or can you give me, because otherwise it's just pleasing you. I know the use case, for instance, of a friend of mine who was using AI for school, being like, okay, I need to change school. Like this school is not working for my child. I need another school. And so AI was giving her all the confirmation that this school was wrong. And then she's like, okay, I'm just going to leave that school. I was like, but did you ask another perspective? Did you ask from the perspective of the teacher, from the perspective of the peers, from the perspective of, and as soon as she started doing this, she came back with more awareness. And then she could start a conversation with a teacher, a conversation with a principal. And she could go back into a repair approach rather than just a rupture and a destruction approach, which can happen when you go down those rabbit holes.
Some mums, I noticed that probably the major comment in the Facebook group was around the environment and the impact. What are your thoughts around that? Because I actually really don't understand enough about it.
This is where there is lots of conversation around ethical use of AI and how can we do that properly. And it's legitimate because actually there are so many models out there and they all add different environmental impact. And so what I would say to anyone listening to this is when you start using ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini and so on, and you ask a simple question, you can choose the model that's going to be giving you the answer. And always choose what we call lightweight model, which is the one that is not the most sophisticated if it's for a simple answer, because the consumption of water and energy will be way lower. So for instance, on cloud, if you use a Haiku model, which is the lowest model, you only consume 0.22 watts per hour. Whereas if you use a 4.6, 4.7, you use 4 kilowatt per hour. So it's really thinking about, okay, do I need a very high model, thinking through, researching online, doing all of this, or can I do it with a lightweight?
Like aircon or heating, you like electricity. I just want to do the room that I'm in. So I don't do the whole house all the time.
I love this analogy and I've never thought about this. But so many people will be like, but I'm not going to use AI because it's destroying the environment. And I completely agree with that approach. And you can be an activist in this way, or you can decide to use AI consciously and be mindful about how you use it. Because in the end, depending on how you use it, it's going to help you create a positive impact in the world. I know that without AI, I couldn't create the impact that I'm creating today, but I am using it very consciously. And also look for the different companies because they all use different ways. So for instance, that's why I love Anthropic. Anthropic is the one that is having the most environmental friendly approach. So it's just choosing and having your own journey, and rather than throwing the guilt and the environmental approach to AI, just thinking about how can I use AI in a way that is responsible for the environment and helpful for me. Yeah. So you have different model and each model is having a different impact.
What about data? A lot of mums are talking about personal information. So let's say I'm putting a lot of personal information about my health, my husband, finances, whatever it is. What about data? People are very worried about that. What are your thoughts?
As they should. They should be worried about that because, first of all, there are things that you can do to protect those data. So those of you who are using ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude and so on, you always have a setting where you can turn it off so that the model is not learning from your data. So you can start doing this. So when you use very sensitive data, you want to turn that off. When you use data that you actually want AI to learn about, for instance, female health, female perspective, woman experience, motherhood, AFED, and so on, you can turn it back on.
So it's basically like a private browser on Chrome. You go private browser, normal browser.
Exactly.
Okay. Another fear, another major one in the Facebook group was AI is going to replace the whole workforce. What are our children going to do for work? What are your thoughts around that?
It's a very fair and important question and concern. And this is where there is a research that has been published by Anthropic, which I invite everyone. Again, I have zero interest recommending this research. But they shared what kind of jobs will be more at risk and other will be less at risk. But what's always something that I tell to everyone is you are at risk of losing your job by it being taken by someone else who knows how to use AI and you don't, rather than AI taking your job. Because AI won't be able to do the end-to-end job of everyone. It will be able to do parts of a job. So if you are resisting using AI, you are even more at risk of your job being taken by AI. We are really in that phase of a revolution where you have to be part of it. Because if you start watching, you know, like the cars versus the horses, if you're like, no, I'm going to stay on my horse and I'm never going to drive a car, you're going to be bypassed. All the Kodak story, which I don't know if anyone listening to this heard, but Kodak refused to go into digital photo and Kodak disappeared. So it's really this moment we call that in the tech phase, the Kodak moment, where you have to decide to go with it and then influence it, which is what I'm doing a lot around ethical use of AI, conscious use of AI, making sure that we do AI consciously with regulation, regulation and approaches that protect the human rather than take over the human.
I think that's a great point. The other thing I was thinking with that is I wish that we had a choice and we could all sit back and go together and do a vote for AI. But I agree with you. I think it's gone. The train's on the tracks. Like we're on it already. Like it'd be great to think that we could all make change. We could all make a difference. I think the train's on the track with the white man in California anyway. So I think the ship's kind of sailed. But with our children, their connection to them and how important AI will be, that's one of the reasons I've started using it, because I just thought, how can I not? Because that's where my children are going to learn and get work and everything. If I'm behind and refusing to use it, I don't know how I will support them.
Yeah. And this is where I know it can be controversial, but with my supervision, I let my daughter use AI. and start coding with AI because they love coding, even though they're 7 and 9. I think the tech gene is in their blood, and they really love tech. And so I let them use AI with my supervision. I really want to insist on that. And because I think what's going to set our young children apart in this revolution is their creativity, their emotional intelligence, their ability to, you know, explore literature and history and emotions and lack of emotion and all of those things that make the human experience truly human. And this is where I am not fatalistic about AI taking over all of the jobs and our children not doing anything. I love to always say when I speak about AI is, you know, 40% of the jobs that exist today didn't exist in the 1960s. So it is what's going to happen. There will be job destruction, but there will be job creation. Saying when I was in digital transformation, now it's AI transformation, job are destroyed and job are created. So new job will emerge and some job will be destroyed. But if we teach our children problem solving, creativity, daydreaming, being who they are, self-advocacy, this confidence in their own self, they will be standing.
I love that. I'm going to ask you final questions before we finish up, Leticia, for mums who are already using AI, who've done some basic food planning and et cetera, et cetera. What are some less known mum hacks or anything like that that women could be like, oh, fuck, I didn't know I could do that?
So now I connect my email with the AI and I have this ability to, I'm so excited when I say that. I just ask in the morning, I go into this automation. I'm just like, can you tell me by order of priority the email I need to reply to? And can you draft an answer for me of those email? And it go and it draft it in my draft folder on my Gmail. And then I just have to review it and send it. Well, then the other things that I would say is creating skill. So for instance, if you want, you know, it's something that is repetitive that you're always doing. So for instance, if I talk about business, for me, what I always do, I have a podcast as well. It's like I have to prepare a podcast episode. I have to prepare guests. I just have this automation where it's telling me you need to send an email to the guest with a question. These are the questions. So it's like doing all of those little tasks for me ahead of me doing it. And this is just the next level that I want to share with everyone is this kind of agentic AI automation approach where you use AI to automate some of the repetitive things that you do in your life or in your business or in your leadership role.
Thank you so much for your expertise. You are such a great, strong female leader in the AI space. And we so need people like you because without that, the white men are going to fucking wipe the rest of us out. And we don't have enough women in that space. So I really want to credit you for that. If anyone would like to check out more about Leticia, she's the fucking best. And I hate being mansplained to. Like, I fucking hate it. And the thought of having to go and talk to a white man about AI and then he can tell me, you know, you have some cooking to could maybe do some meal planning, like fucking grinding. I can't stand it. So if anyone would like to check out Leticia, she's on the Understanding Zoe. It's all going to be in the show notes. I really appreciate your time, Leticia.
Thank you so much, Jane.
Sal is a pediatric OT and Kat is a pediatric speechy. And they've both worked inside, outside the system. They have kids that are neurodivergent. Sal and Kat both have got lived experience of being in the neurodivergent space with people that they know or in their family and know what it's like to be a mum advocating hard for their children. So they've been on both sides of it, which is perfect for this podcast.